Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
And the clock on the wall says 11:01. Close enough. It's time for Fantasy Sports Friday on HealthyLife.net Radio. I'm your host, Jay Cruz, and we are going to talk about a few things happening in the world of sports, the sporting life, and fantasy sports. Last couple of weeks, been a little under the weather and had a replay show with myself and Sharky Zartman, who does the show Fridays, just before this one, Fantasy Sports Friday, talking about some stuff that you can go find on the podcast on demand link on the HealthyLife.net homepage if you want to kind of hear a cool conversation about UCLA sports and sports in the South Bay and things that Sharky has been involved with over the years. The World Series came and went. Didn't really get a big chance to talk about that last week. There was a lot of activity in Los Angeles. Of course, the Dodgers are now the world champions. Congratulations to them. Thought the Yankees would take it to at least six games. It was very, for me personally, I don't know how long you've been listening to Healthy Life or how long you've been listening to me or not. Maybe this is your very first time. Nonetheless, I'm a native Californian. My formative years, I grew up in a San Francisco, San Jose area in Northern California, which technically Central California, if you think of all the Northern California north of San Francisco, really. But nonetheless, the two big hubs are the Bay Area and Los Angeles, and San Diego as well, being a big hub, but not so much when it comes to sports. They do have the Padres, they did have the Chargers, but I'm not going to get into that. So, when my family moved from Los Angeles to the Bay Area, we lived in Anaheim. And, of course, I was familiar with the Dodgers. And we lived so close to the Angels, then the California Angels Stadium, that they were, by default, my favorite team. I just didn't know any better. They were literally a stone's throw away. You could hear the crowd cheering certain nights, and that's probably my entry. You go, what's that, Dad, Mom, what's that noise? And they told me, it's baseball, and maybe put on a game, put on a radio broadcast of a game, and, you know, start kind of getting into that. And then, you know, my dad had an opportunity to better life, better job, place where he could move up in the world. And my family moved to Northern California from Anaheim. I kind of liked it. I didn't know any better here in Southern California. I especially was intrigued by the baseball stadium and Disneyland also being very close. So that was kind of all I knew, and I was fine with that. So we moved to Northern California, and like I was trying to object to the move, like I had anything to do with parents' decisions. But, you know, one thing I did say that I, you know, would be missing would be the California Angels. So my mom's like, well, you know, you're in luck. They have baseball teams up here in Northern California as well. So, all right, well, what are the names of the teams? Well, there's the San Francisco Giants, and I'm like, ooh, they sound pretty cool. Giants, like, you know, that's a team you want to root for. Giants, like, you know, they sound like they could win, right? And there's the Oakland Athletics. I'm like, okay, I don't even know what the word athletic means, even though I was getting into sports. So, I decide that, all right, I think I'm going to be a Giants fan. Okay, so, you know, of course I couldn't stay up late listening to the game. I'd have my mom write down the score of the game, somehow get it from the newspaper, and I get a little message that the Giants lost. I'm like, ooh, young kid, I'm like, I can't be rooting for that team. What's that other team called? Well, they're the Oakland A's. All right, well, maybe I'll check them out. And then, you know, parents are like, well, part of being a fan is you gotta roll with the punches. Someday your team wins, someday you lose. That's what makes it more fun when you win, and, you know, you suffer through the losses and you enjoy the wins a little bit more. I'm like, yeah, I get that, and that's good to know. Let me check out the A's. It just so happens they're playing against the California Angels that night. And I'm like, all right, this team from Oakland can win. They're going to be my favorite team. Lo and behold, they beat the Angels 3-2. At this point, I'm like, you know, I'm not feeling sorry for the Angels because, like, for some reason I can't listen to their games now. So I decide, all right, I'm going to go with the A's. And, you know, next thing I know, they're in the World Series the following year. We had moved to, now we're in a house, no longer an apartment. And I even remember playing hooky from school because the A's were in the playoffs. And I had seen the Super Bowl, and I thought the playoffs was like a one-time game. I didn't realize it was, you know, a best of five or a best of seven like the World Series. So I kind of pretended I was sick so I could watch them play the Detroit Tigers. I'm in there on a little black and white TV. I got the game on. I got my A's hat on. I'm all watching. I got baseball cards out. My mom comes in to give me a soup and a sandwich at lunchtime, and she goes, "Hey, you're not sick. You played hooky today or watched the game, didn't you?" And I'm like, "Yeah." She's like, "Well, good news, bad news. You got away with it today. Bad news is they play again tomorrow, and they have to win three games, so they go on to the World Series." So, and then, you know, I went to school, and the teachers were naturally big baseball fans. They had the game on in the room. That Oakland A's team went on to beat the Tigers. They beat the Cincinnati Reds, the big red machine. Little did I know at that point in time what a huge, colossal, monumental upset that was. That Cincinnati big red machine team, you know, stacked with guys like Pete Rose, Johnny Bench, you know, household names. Those A's players became household names. It took them three World Series to do so. You know, Reggie Jackson, Catfish Hunter, Vida Blue was pretty young. So the A's won that. Quite exciting. Then they beat the Dodgers 4-1. Oh, the Mets in seven games. And then the Dodgers to win their third straight World Series. You know, it's pretty tough to have another favorite baseball team after experiencing that as a young kid and being spoiled, literally. It's like my life is gravy. This team just won three World Series. And then there was the 1980s teams. This was after free agency came in. And, you know, Reggie Jackson ended up, first he went to the Orioles, then he signed as a free agent with the Yankees. Catfish Hunter also went there. I think Ken Holtzman and a handful of those great Oakland A's players went to the Yankees. So, you know, I kind of started following the Yankees a little bit when they were on TV. You know, some of my favorite players were there. And the A's were decimated because, you know, Charlie Finley just wouldn't pay players what they're worth. And again, this was at a time before free agency. And, you know, of course, before cable TV and ESPN and stuff like that. So we had to read box scores and baseball cards and listen to a lot of radio broadcasts. And that's, you know, what I did getting grown up. So fast forward into the 80s. You know, the A's have rebuilt. They've got a great farm system. A lot of good, young, power-hitting guys like Jose Canseco, Mark McGuire. They're putting together a pretty formidable team that went to three straight World Series. And in that first World Series against the Dodgers kind of got lucky to even get into that World Series. The Mets should have been the team. They were the really all-star team. And I was kind of looking forward to an A's-Mets World Series, thinking, you know, it's the two best teams in baseball, right? It's going to be good. Dodgers got in there, and I thought, all right, we have a all-California series. I'm cool with that. And Game one, Dennis Eckersley, the best relief pitcher in baseball, pretty much unhittable, resurrected his career, was a starting pitcher, became average, you know, cleaned up his life when that was kind of a new thing in sports and celebrities, you know, decided to get healthy, take some steps, out of their past habits, and so he had a lot going for him. Great pitcher, great fastball, a little cocky, a little arrogant. He was on a roll. That team was pretty much on fire. And that Tommy Lasorda, the Dodgers, decides, you know, I got this guy Kurt Gibson. He's hurt, but I'm going to send him up there, pinch hit. And the rest is history. Kurt Gibson hit that first pitch over the wall. And Dodgers went on to beat the A's in that World Series. So fast forward to time in the future. I decided to make a life change myself. I am now moving to Southern California from Northern California. And I've been here for, on November 1st, it was the 23rd year anniversary of me packing up the car with some stuff and moving to Los Angeles. And, you know, I figured, yeah, I'm leaving the sports teams that I like behind, but, you know, with cable TV, you can watch them anywhere. There's, apps you can look at and stuff. And, you know, the internet was just barely forming even then. So, nonetheless, I've listened to a lot of Dodger games. It's tough to really go, yeah, I'm a Dodger fan, you know, being with the years of Northern California. But one thing that, you know, kind of did come around is just being a sports fan and talking to many people here in L.A. and getting their perspective on the Kurt Gibson, Dennis Eckersley moment in time, seeing it replayed at least 100 times on, you know, local TV, you know, and it's a great moment in Dodger history. Just one that I'd prefer not to relive as often as I have. Now, I've kind of made peace with it. It's kind of a funny thing, but, the less I see it, the better, but I kind of laugh at it now. So, game one of the World Series just a couple weeks ago, like 2 weeks ago today. Freddie Freeman, first baseman, who'd been injured and had some family issues. One of his young kids was dealing with some illnesses. And you know, quite frankly, the Dodgers have been a great team, winning the National League West a number of years in a row. They've been to a handful of World Series. They did win during the COVID-19 season. It was the truncated season. I just like to throw that word in, truncated, because we don't use it that often, but it was bantied around quite a bit in sports talk nomenclature back then in the COVID years. And the Dodgers did win that World Series against the Tampa Bay Rays. But it didn't feel like a complete win. You know, it was a short, again, truncated season. 60 games, that's barely a third of a regular, that's a quarter of like a regular season. 162 games, plus the playoffs. Best of three, best of five, best of seven. You know, so you got all that going on. Anyway, Freddie Freeman hit a grand slam to win game one of the World Series in the 10th inning in L.A., literally the same part of the stadium where Kurt Gibson hit his home run. And it happened at 8:37 p.m. West Coast time, exactly the time that Kurt Gibson had hit his home run back in the series against the Oakland A's. I have been pulling for somebody on the Dodgers to do something big, as big as Kurt Gibson, and therefore, there could be a new Dodger hero while I live in Los Angeles. I've already put up with 23 years of Kurt Gibson. Ironically, that was his number, 23. And again, I've kind of made my peace with it, but, I certainly wish things would have gone different. I wish Eckersley would have struck him out and wish the A's would have won, but it didn't happen. So, when Freddie Freeman hit that home run, I kind of felt the series was over. You know, looking back at how when Kurt Gibson hit that home run, I was still optimistic that the A's would come back. I mean, you're like, that's one game, but the way it just galvanized the team and lit a fire under the Dodgers back then and now, it was, you know, literally the same thing all over again. So I'm very happy for Freddie Freeman, especially with the personal things he overcame with the family and his son, I believe. I forget what it was, but it was a serious illness. Freddie had to step away from the team and the game for a while. he knew to attend to his son and, you know, the family and just, you know, all of that. Then he had some knee injuries and, you know, a bit of a struggle. And when he came to the Dodgers from the Atlanta Braves, where he had, you know, he was World Series MVP just a couple short seasons ago, and, you know, he is a Los Angeles or Southern California native, as is his wife, which made coming to the Dodgers an attractive thing. Number one, they're a good team, as proven. They just won a World Series. So he wasn't going to, like, some rebuilding team like the A's, where that's a whole nother story and kind of depressing. But I'm not going to get into that today. Maybe we will. But anyway, so Freddie's here. And then last season, you know, his first full season with the Dodgers after coming over from Atlanta, he found some information out during the negotiation and free agency process. You know, in his mind, he was told either by the team or the agent or however it was disseminated to him, the information was, you know, the Braves essentially are turning the page. They're going to make a trade to get Matt Olson from the A's, power-hitting first baseman, who's done pretty well for Atlanta. No World Series, but he's had some good numbers, and they, you know, were able to get him from Oakland in a trade, and they signed him to a long-term deal, which were about the same, you know, pretty big numbers that Freddie Freeman would be due as well. So he found out later that actually there was, you know, still an opening, you know, that he could have re-signed with Atlanta, which he would have been fine with because, you know, he just won a World Series. His family was pretty happy there. And, you know, it's one thing to grow up in one region of the country, but, you know, people move all the time. You know, they just might be closer to some brothers and sisters and, you know, some familiar things. But overall, I mean, it seems like he's having a good life. He can afford to live in a great house, playing Major League Baseball in Atlanta, and you're traveling all the time anyway. But, you know, he kind of felt he was done a disservice either by just in a lack of communication, and he felt just a little strange about it. And some of the Dodger teammates were even like, "Hey, man, you okay? You're cool with being here, right? I mean, it's not like you know secretly wish you were still with the Braves." So, you know, he overcame some of that and, you know, proved his, you know, loyalty and trust to, you know, a group of guys with the Dodgers. Shohei Ohtani. It was interesting. The season starts. He gets embroiled in a gambling scandal, and it turned out his interpreter was a guy gambling, but that was still kind of a strange one. And then, of course, you know, Pete Rose goes and dies this year, because he was probably, you know, going, "Hey, if Ohtani can get up there and play, and you got some gambling accusations, how about revisiting my situation?" So it's pretty ironic. But Shohei Ohtani, one of the greatest seasons in history. 55 home runs and stolen bases. Mookie Betts, who was having an MVP-like season before he got hurt for about 2 months, so it was one of the best managerial jobs I believe Dave Roberts has pulled off, especially when you add up the fact that the Dodgers pitching staff was a patchwork quilted effort this year. Literally every great pitcher they had, and you start the season, they had a stack of good pitchers. They all end up injured and weren't available. I think it was game four. It was the game that the Dodgers did lose where they, you know, they go, "Tomorrow's going to be a bullpen game." And that's just something that blows my mind, that in this day and age, you know, you can't save a fifth starter to start a game instead of depleting a bullpen. But nonetheless, they pushed all the right buttons, they hit them all the right way, and Freddie Freeman literally morphed into the same pose at the same exact time on the same exact place in a home run that galvanized a Dodger World Series win in five games, as the team did so back in the 80s when they defeated the Oakland A's in five games after Gibson's home run. Freddie Freeman had a great series. He homered in, I think, four of the five games, and he had homered in the series against the Mets just before that. So, luckily, I avoided Dodger traffic and didn't get caught up in any of the hoopla. And it's not just Dodger fans. This thing happens where fans kind of run amok and destroy their own city each and every time somebody wins a championship. It'll happen again. Probably in a couple months. Looking at you, Kansas City. Yeah, you guys had a shooting. It's your parade last year, so you're probably going to win the Super Bowl again, the way it's looking. We're going to turn the page and talk about some other things, the aftermath a little bit of the Major League Baseball season and kind of preparing for next season and drafts and trades and things like that. The NBA is a couple weeks into the season, a little sweat on the brow for them. We don't really do fantasy hockey. We are in the middle of the National Football League schedule, and there's some developments going on. The trade deadline just happened, and we'll be right back. I'm Jay Cruz, Fantasy Sports Friday, HealthyLife.net Radio.
You know, when my grandson takes a long car trip, he listens to audiobooks. A long drive seems faster, and sometimes he doesn't want to get out of the car because the book isn't finished. With over 100,000 books, Audible.com is one of the best places to get audiobooks. You can listen to a bestseller anytime, anywhere. Audible.com, your destination for the widest selection of audiobooks. Join millions of listeners. Just go to the Audible.com on HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click.
Hi, I'm Danica Patrick. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing, but not every child gets to be carefree. 1 in 6 kids in the U.S. are hungry. This breaks my heart, and it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and gives it to families in need. To help, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Roku is like having your own video library with over 300,000 choices. And it's the best way to get Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, and so much more. There's a Roku player for every budget, so go to HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on the Roku banner.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Fantasy Sports Friday here on HealthyLife.net Radio. I'm Jay Cruz. Left off talking about baseball in the World Series, a little reminiscing on my fanhood of the Oakland A's and segueing into Freddie Freeman, the MVP. So, of course, there's a lot of people in baseball looking ahead to next year. We'll kind of, you know, do that as well and kind of get into the fantasy football updates. Take a quick look at the baseball teams from last year. Now, there's a good chance that one of these leagues might fold. My basketball league, that is a keeper league, decided not to renew. So there's two baseball teams I do currently have. The Southside Stone Sox in the keeper league, they finished in fifth place last year. And then the more challenging auction league, that is the team named Maury's Wigs. That's a much more challenging and deeper league. Did finish sixth overall, but did make the playoffs, which is a huge goal. The first year with that team, I struggled quite a bit. So, kind of looking at people who might be, let's take a quick look at guys in my team and their upcoming salary. And if they're going to... Now, this is from last year's draft. There's a few players still on and not on the team. But taking a look, and then these salaries go up and count against the salary cap. So last year, my target as a free agent was Dodger pitcher Yoshinobu Yamamoto. He was pretty good when he was healthy, but like a lot of Dodger pitchers, pretty much all of them this year, he was on the injured list. He did do well in the playoffs and World Series. I paid $37 fictitious dollars for him. That would be $38 next year. Questionable if I keep him. Now, if this league does have a winter meeting season or period where we will kind of get together in the off season and maybe do some trades, I wouldn't mind trading Yamamoto. I think he's still going to be good, but just And the way fantasy sports and baseball right now in particular is going, you know, pitching is always a super high premium. It is what wins the championships when all is said and done at the end. Good pitching always beats good hitting. But in the long term, paying high dollars in fantasy baseball, pitchers only start, you know, maybe once a week. Maybe put that money into a position player. We'll see. If I get a good offer, I may turn the page. Also got Minnesota pitcher Bailey Ober. He will cost me $17 next season. Jose Leclerc, I no longer have him. Washington relief pitcher Kyle Finnegan, paid $2 for him last year. He'll go up to $3 the next season. He had a pretty good season. Probably will keep him, especially at the what looks to be a pretty bargain price. Speaking of bargain price, Padres infielder Jake Cronenworth, I paid $1 for him last year. He was a high-performing player. You know, there's another chance here. If I was to be completely financially prudent, I could make Cronenworth my everyday first baseman. And where, how much would... So next year, Pete Alonso of the New York Mets, I think he's going to be a free agent in the offseason, the real Pete Alonso. I have him for $34. This would be his third season on my team. He would go up to $37. So he's someone I kind of plan on keeping. He's kind of my offensive anchor. But if a good trade comes along, Cronenworth actually could be my first baseman. I could spend that $37 elsewhere. So two moves would save me like $74 off Yamamoto and Pete Alonso. Yamamoto, I'm probably either going to let go or trade. Alonso, I would like to get a good offer. Continuing, Brooks Raley drafted him, dropped him pretty early in the season. Jorge Soler, this guy has bounced around. It now says he's on the Angels. Looks like they've picked him up. He was with the Giants last year. Then he got traded to the Braves, and now apparently appears he's with the Angels, either a trade or something there. He will go up to $5 next year. He's kind of on the bubble. We'll see. If he's on the Angels, I don't know. That's just almost a cursed franchise, and people sort of, it's a great place to play, but nonetheless. Chris Taylor I had last year, kept him and let him go. He had a really bad season at the plate, but he was around. The Dodgers kept him, and he got a lot of playing time. He's one of those, you know, late-round kind of people. Also, my favorite late-round available guy is Kike Hernandez, who I didn't draft, but had on the team later on. Based on his rookie season and high stolen base total, Estuary Ruiz, I had him last year at $2. I think I ended up dropping him. He was on the injured list much of the year, and the team formerly known as the Oakland A's, who have now dropped Oakland from their team. And if you heard the first 20 minutes of this show, I mean, it might be time for, I think I've moved on from them being my favorite team, not they're moving from Oakland, even though I certainly have moved from Oakland. Yeah, but nonetheless, it was a sour ending. They'll be playing in a minor league stadium in Sacramento and then moving to Las Vegas, where I just don't see baseball in the middle of the summer working in Las Vegas. But, you know, I'm just broadcasting. I'm not a team owner. So Ruiz is gone. Not a big savings there, but a position and outfield I'll need. Tampa Bay relief pitcher Colin Posch, he gets a lot of setups and a lot of sneaky good numbers. He would be up to $5 next year, kind of on the bubble. Someone to keep, but $5 maybe a little high for what he really gives you. Edwin Diaz, here's an interesting situation because would be paying him $30 next year in salary. The first year I had him, I had to eat his salary because he was injured from the World Baseball Classic. Him and his teammates celebrating a victory. He landed weird, blew out his knee, and was out for the season. Luckily, no arm trouble. And then last year, well, the Mets finally turned it on and got pretty far. They did get to the National League Championship Series where they ended up falling short to the Dodgers. I think that was 6 games, so they did a little better than the Yankees when all was said and done there. And better than the Padres. Anyway, he'd be up to $30 next year, and I just don't know if I want to pay that much money for him because he didn't quite get that high of a return. maybe if someone wants to trade for him, again, winter meetings would be possible. If not, I might let him go back into the free agent market because I kind of want to keep Petey Alonso. And saving $30 on Diaz would make keeping Alonso that much easier. Josh Hader, his contract will go up to $23 next year. He's a relief pitcher with Houston. Houston typically does pretty good. Hader is still under 30, and that way, you know, keeping him at less money, $7 less than Edwin Diaz, I still have a strong relief pitcher presence, and I got the bonus with the Washington guy, just said his name, Kyle Finnegan, who I'll be keeping next year. There's Taj Bradley, who I ended up trading during the season, and got to decide what to do with Xander Bogaerts. That was the main trade I got for him. Braxton Garrett with Miami. He's no longer with the team. Yuri Perez, I had him for a couple dollars, but he ended up needing the Tommy John surgery and ended up releasing him because basically there's just not a lot of roster spaces to, you know, hold an injured player. You know, he was kind of young, potential, and marginal, but not quite, you know, big-time superstar. Blake Snell, I have him for $2, which is a bargain because the season before his owner gave up on him a little early, and then Snell turned out to have a good season. You know, last year, the unfortunate thing with Blake Snell is his agent, Scott, holding out for more money, always Boros, you know, held Blake Snell out for as long as he could, trying to get the highest amount, which, you know, is what you want from an agent, or some players do. And nonetheless, he ended up signing pretty late, missed much of spring training, therefore didn't start really the first month to 6 weeks of the season, and then had injuries into the season because of that. His deal with the Giants was a two-year deal with a player option to opt out after a season, which he did. So there's a lot of egg on the face for the Giants, who didn't really get the much out of a return with him. Now, for me, hopefully Blake Snell will sign earlier than the, you know, beginning of the season like he did this past year and is on a team before spring training and can enter the season healthy. I'm keeping him because I still will have him for a very bottom basement $5 next year, even with a $3 increase. Catcher William Contreras, keeping him. He's a National League All-Star catcher. And I picked up his brother in a trade. I read that his brother with the Cardinals might be playing some first base, or maybe it was William Contreras. I need to double check. One of the two will be playing some backup first base, which adds some flexibility. And I kind of like having the Contreras brothers as my catcher. William is the slightly better all-star of the two, and I have him for a lot less money than his brother. So that's something to consider. Jack Sawinski, I had last year, kept him, dropped him, and he's no longer in the picture. Lane Thomas is somebody I had. He got traded to Cleveland and had some big moments in the playoffs, also made the last outs, which allowed the Yankees to advance to the World Series in the playoffs. But he's now in Cleveland, no longer with the Washington Nationals. Decent power, decent average, some stolen bases, and Cleveland's a good team. Somebody I'd look at probably keeping next year at a $5 price tag. Anthony Santander of Baltimore, a first baseman outfielder. His contract will go up to $5 next season, still a bargain, and be keeping him. Isak Paredes, sorry for mispronouncing your name for about a season as Isaac. It's Isak Paredes. He's essentially the Cubs' third baseman. They acquired him from the Tampa Bay Rays. And I had him for a dirt cheap price. Last year of $2, he'll be up to $5. And I'm definitely going to be keeping him as my everyday third baseman. I'm probably going to let Nolan Arenado go. His salary on my team will go up to $28 from $25 next season. This will be his third year on my team. I originally acquired Arenado and Josh Hader in a trade that involved Joe Musgrave and Manny Machado, both San Diego Padres. Machado, I was paying $10 more than Arenado, and I wasn't getting a huge return, although he does hit for power numbers, but in this scoring system, he also strikes out a lot, and his overall numbers are not really as high as you think they are. So, and Arenado, getting a little older, still a productive player, but at $28, that's money I can save and probably keep Petey Alonso, which is, you know, going to be the highest priced player on the team. Also, got to make a decision on Jeremy Pena. Have him at $17. That'll move up to $20. He's a pretty solid infielder, shortstop for the Astros. And seems like a little bit too much money to pay him. But I also have Xander Bogaerts, who I picked up, who plays with the Padres, also plays shortstop, second base. One of the two is either going to get released or maybe traded. Xander Bogaerts is older. Pena's younger. I'm probably going to let one of the two go. Or Jose Altuve. I'll be paying him $32 next season. He's not going anywhere when it comes to hitting with the Astros. And, you know, he's kind of a villainized guy in the Major League Baseball circles because of the trash can controversy when the Astros were clearly caught cheating, banging on the trash can, stealing signs a few seasons ago. Altuve has been accused of having an electronic monitor to circumvent the trash can banging. Basically considered a cheater in most baseball circles. And cheating or no cheating, he puts up good numbers. I don't really have to put up with him. But the first season I had him, he missed quite a bit of time. He had been hit on a pitch on the wrist, again on the World Baseball Classic. I was cursed with that thing. So overall, Maurice Wiggs getting into the playoffs last year and finishing in sixth place was a great victory and a goal accomplished with this team, which again is much more challenging. Again, I mentioned, you know, Manny Machado, yeah, he puts up great numbers, but he also, you know, deters from those numbers in a lot of ways with strikeouts and stuff like that. So Altuve could be traded, although I do like to keep him. His salary is going to be over $30 next year. I could get away cheaper with going at second base with Bogaerts and shortstop with Pena. And I also have Mason Winn, who is a $1 player last year in his rookie season, who's not mentioned on this because I had drafted him in the minor league draft overall. And who else? Will Smith. Again, I traded him and got Wilson Contreras, the brother of William Contreras. I can't remember how much his salary is, but I did that to kind of free up a space because between Smith and Contreras, you know, I had to start one at my utility position, and it seemed I was missing out on a lot of other good players. So I was able to pick up a Yankees pitcher for Will Smith and make some nice trades with that. So those are the prices off the players that I acquired in the draft. And then going to, you know, members on the team not mentioned. We've talked about Xander Bogaerts, Mason Winn a little bit. Giants outfielder Mike Yastrzemski is somebody I picked up. Joe Kalinic, he's an outfielder with the Braves. Picked him up in a trade along the way. Not sure about his status. Alex Verdugo, I think I signed him off the waiver wire for $1. He's probably going to stick with the team based off that. Walker Buehler, somebody who's been injured quite often for the Dodgers in the past. He did come back late in the season, and I did pick him up late in the season. Somebody who I'll be able to kind of keep. Daniel Hudson. Wow, he's going to retire. Daniel Hudson after the World Series. Well, congratulations, Daniel Hudson. I had an interesting story about Daniel Hudson. As a part-time employment, I drive for the ride service, ride share company Uber occasionally. Just started doing that. And a few weeks ago, I had a rider who needed to go to Dodger Stadium. Turned out to be the mother of Daniel Hudson, who I go, hey, he's on my fantasy team. What do you know? And he had been a World Series winner with the Washington Nationals, and I had him last year, picked him up. He was a very effective pitcher, and I just see where it says he is not active, but that's because he's retiring. Now, I don't know why he's not active next to Walker Buehler and Blake Snell, who, well, he declined his option, so he's not with the team. Anyway, a lot of things moving, and Alex Cobb was another guy I picked up late. So there's a couple pitchers who were picked up, and Gavin Stone I have, who should be healthy to go for next season. So nonetheless, Maurice Wiggs with maybe a couple high-priced players, mostly Yamamoto with the Dodgers, or Petey Alonso, or Jose Altuve. One of the guys making the $30 is going to have to be traded, released, or something of that nature. And I can probably keep most of the other guys that I've mentioned. So looking forward to keeping the dynasty growing. That's the fun about this particular league, is that you draft players and can kind of keep them year after year. If you're successful, that's a good thing. If you're not successful, you want to turn them over and get to new players ASAP, which is kind of always a fun way to look at it. And I'm Jay Cruz. We're going to come back and look at the NFL matchups and fantasy implications in a moment on Fantasy Sports Friday.
Over here. Here's a secret for a virus-free computer. ESET. They've been a pioneer in the antivirus industry for over 25 years. 25 years of innovative, top-rated antivirus protection. ESET's award-winning security solutions provide a safe online experience for over 100 million home and business computer owners. They are so affordable, fast, and simple to use. So be gone, you blue screen of death. ESET's on my computer. If it's not on yours, visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on ESET now.
I love this song!
I love nachos.
Loving everything? You might be buzzed.
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzz warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Dwayne Johnson here. The earthquakes you see in movies are one thing, but real life is a completely different animal. Just because you can't predict an earthquake doesn't mean that you can't prepare for one. In the event of a real earthquake, you should drop, cover, and hold on. Visit ready.gov/earthquake and practice what to do to keep you and your family safe in the event of a real earthquake, and you'll be seen as a hero by your family and your loved ones.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Where positive people and radio unite. HealthyLife.net.
And we're back. Fantasy Sports Friday. I'm Jay Cruz. It's HealthyLife.net Radio. If you're listening today, Friday, to the live broadcast, don't forget you can listen again to an encore presentation Saturday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, also on demand. And if you happen to be up last weekend at 2 a.m. in the morning and you got a surprise edition of Fantasy Sports Friday because it was the day we set the clocks back, so threw in a bonus show for people in the middle of the night who are probably wondering, why is this show on in the middle of the night? Well, there you go. So, a couple news items coming up on the following week in the NFL. Jacksonville Jaguars' Trevor Lawrence is unlikely to play against the Vikings. That's not good news for Jacksonville, and worse news for Coach Doug Peterson, who is sitting on a toasty seat. The Yankees, like the Dodgers, have picked up the option. Well, no, Dave Roberts has another year on his contract. The Yankees picked up the option on manager Bob Boone. Buffalo Bills are ruling out rookie wide receiver Keon Coleman with a wrist injury against Indianapolis Colts. Lamar Jackson looked pretty good to lead the Ravens to victory on Thursday Night Football. Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase looked good. They just weren't playing defense and were unable to stop Lamar Jackson. A high-scoring 35-34 game, Baltimore and Cincinnati. They played about a month ago, and it was an overtime game, and the score was like 36-33. A couple exciting games from these two teams. Baltimore with a sweep, and that makes a commanding lead in the NFC North. Cincinnati, a very good and now a very desperate team. So that's kind of a latest on that. Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase put out outstanding numbers. Burrow for like 450 passing yards. Chase with 200 receiving. Great fantasy numbers, but sad news for the Bengals. Depends on, you know, what you're focused on. You like playing fantasy more than, what do you like picking sides? Well, the NFL, once again, is force-feeding another country our product. This time, the unfortunate nation is Germany. They will be subjected to the treat of the New York Football Giants and the Carolina Football Panthers, both teams of 2-7. I know it would be sneaky and easy to reverse those numbers and say they're both 7-2, and that would be quite a kick-butt matchup, but that's not what's happening. It's a novelty, so the Americans in Germany will enjoy it, and the Germans in Germany, well, it's just another thing to kind of watch and drink with. The Giants and Panthers, it will be on the NFL Network, it will be broadcast, but it's so early that, 6:30 here on the West Coast, kind of a day to sleep in, honestly. The Giants are favored by 6.5. It seems pretty high. You know, take my advice and like, just if you're a gambler, don't bet on this game. It's just garbage. Two bad teams. The end result is whoever loses this game will have the leg up for the number one draft pick next year. And Bryce Young, who's been benched for a couple weeks, let's hope he has a good performance either way. The Giants probably will be, I don't know how much longer Brian Daboll will be coaching that team. They're the better team, but they just haven't been doing so well. I think Daniel Jones, a quarterback's not really helping things out. Well, the Kansas City Chiefs remain undefeated. It's always a division rival that seems to knock an undefeated team off their high horse. Denver comes in this week. Denver got whacked last week by the Baltimore Ravens after having a pretty nice little run. The Broncos are 5-4. They're 7.5-point underdogs playing in Kansas City this coming Sunday. Now, the Chiefs had a shorter week. The Broncos had the full day. But again, the familiarity between the two teams. The Broncos did beat the Chiefs last year, and I think it was in Arrowhead. Could have been in... I think it was in Denver. Nonetheless, they will be playing. This could be a sneaky good matchup. I am really liking what the Washington Commanders are doing. They're a franchise I've never really liked in the past. They kind of got a clean slate. New coach Dan Quinn. He's not a new coach. He has been a head coach before. Defensive coach with the Seahawks and that Legion of Boom that went to a couple Super Bowls. And he was coaching the Falcons and had a 28-3 lead against the Patriots. Underscore the word had. And he's been the Cowboys' defensive coach the last couple seasons. Right now the Commanders are 7-2. Jaden Daniels, if not the leg-up rookie of the year leader, you know, he's kind of pulling a Vita Blue. Vita Blue baseball player who had MVP, Cy Young, and rookie of the year type things going. Well, Jaden Daniels has been putting up some great numbers. He had a big Hail Mary against the Bears a couple weeks ago. And last week they beat the New York Giants for the second time, so that's a sweep. The Commanders are 7-2, and before the season, or yeah, 1 week into the season, actually, I took the Commanders on total wins at 8.5, saying, oh, I think they're going to do that. Here we are, week number 9 games complete, and the Commanders need, well, 2 more wins for that to pay off. They're at 7 wins already. They host the Steelers, who have decided to go with Russell Wilson as their starter once his high ankle sprain got better. They picked up a wide receiver at the trade deadline, and the Steelers are sneaky 6-2. I don't think the Commanders are going to run away. Pittsburgh always seems to show up, but the Commanders are at home, and this is a team that's, they're at that point where a good young team is turning things around. They're starting to believe in themselves, and it's an interesting synergy to watch. So keep an eye on the Commanders. Obviously, things can change, but I really believe Jaden Daniels is really adding a bunch of confidence to what's going on with Washington. Again, new name, clean slate, new ownership, and things just are, I cannot speak highly enough for how impressed I have been with Washington Commanders this year. With that being said, Pittsburgh's probably going to win on Sunday. Just talked about Trevor Lawrence probably not going to be playing for the Jaguars this weekend. Jacksonville coming to town. They were a 5.5-point favorite. Now it's 6.5. They're on the road, and that's kind of what happens when a key player for the other team is out. So the Vikings were picked to be probably the doormat of the NFC North with the Bears having a new quarterback, Caleb Williams, the Packers and Lions both having impressive seasons last year. But Minnesota's pretty much a surprise team to beat, although Detroit has handled them in head-to-head competition. The Atlanta Falcons and New Orleans Saints will meet in New Orleans. The Falcons with Kirk Cousins, 6-3, favored by 3.5 over the Saints, who just fired Dennis Allen. Things happen when you lose 7 in a row. Derek Carr, I believe, is back. But the Saints, they're in a bit of a quandary. I don't even know who the interim coach is. And the Falcons are solid with Kirk Cousins on the leadership. And if he goes down, Michael Penix Jr. is probably going to step in at some point and be a pretty solid quarterback. Two teams with nearly identical records that are not as good as I think the teams are. Number one, the 49ers. I think everyone but Brock Purdy has been injured at some time this year, namely Christian McCaffrey with a pair of Achilles injuries. He's been on the shelf all season. He'll be playing this week, making his season debut. The Niners are 4-4, which sounds worse than it really is for them. They, of course, have plenty of time to turn it around, second half of the season, and they're starting to get, you know, key players back. Juwan Jennings, wide receiver, coming back. He's going to be very key because Brandon Ayuk is out for the season. Injured and out for the season. Tampa Bay went to overtime with the Chiefs on Monday night. That was pretty impressive. They are 4-5. I think they're a better team than what that record indicates. I definitely think Baker Mayfield's the right quarterback for this team. And they'll be hosting the Niners. It'll be a Sunday game. But I think the Niners getting those incredible players back, Christian McCaffrey, that's going to be a super big boost. They're also coming off a bye week, and this team kind of knows where they're at as far as looking into the second half of the season. The NFC West is kind of a division underperforming at the moment, if you will, with the Arizona Cardinals, number one at 5-4. They have beat the Niners head-to-head. The Seahawks were leading a couple weeks ago. Now they're in last place at 4-5. You also got the Rams, who've now won a few in a row, and the Niners, who are getting healthy. So this division is starting to, you know, kind of turn things around a little bit. And San Francisco, Tampa Bay on Sunday. I think the Niners are favored by 6.5, but I do think they win. The Bills and the Colts. The Bills picked up Amari Cooper just before the trade deadline. The help. Keon Coleman mentioned a few minutes ago he's probably not going to play this week for the Bills. The Colts have decided to go with the veteran Joe Flacco as a starter the rest of the way. Anthony Richardson still there. Hopefully he can learn. It was interesting. Richardson kind of wrote his own check. He took himself out of the game and he wasn't injured. He just needed a breather. And that's things you don't do in professional sports. So Colts are a 4-5 team, much more competitive than that record sounds. They'll host the Bills. I think it'll be a dogfight. Buffalo's only favored by 4. I think the Bills are going to go deep in the playoffs this year, maybe to the championship. Depends on the matchup. Them, the Ravens, and the Chiefs are the three strongest teams in the AFC. And we'll see where the Chargers, if they end up. They're building for now. We'll get to them in a moment. The Patriots and Bears, kind of an interesting game. The Bears were predicted to do a little better than they have so far, losing the Hail Mary to the Washington Commanders a few weeks ago. Certainly didn't help things. The Patriots, they are rebuilding. Their defense plays pretty good. Their offense is terrible. The Patriots are a 6-point underdog in Chicago this week. For some reason, I would not be surprised if the Patriots, you know, won this game or definitely keep it close. The Bears should win, but I don't know if they're going to put them away. The L.A. Chargers are a sneaky 5-3. They've picked up a few wins in a row. They have the number one defense when it comes to points against. They will play the Tennessee Titans this week. I don't think there'll be a lot of Tennessee fans. This might be a game in Los Angeles where the Chargers outnumber the Tennessee fans. I just think most people in California would move to Tennessee as opposed to root for Tennessee out here. Nonetheless, a game the Chargers should win. They're favored by 2.5 points. Coach Harbaugh slowly working his way into it, into the psyche of this team. They're starting to believe themselves. Justin Herbert has put up good numbers, not spectacular, but his touchdown to interception ratio is 10-1, and that is pretty good. Again, I mentioned their defense is giving up the least amount of points. Definitely think the Chargers should win this game. The last couple of weeks, the games have looked, you know, the scores have been a little more lopsided than the games actually appear. But this is what Harbaugh did with the 49ers a number of years ago. You know, they started winning games close, turning around a team with the same roster from last year, and he just gets good results. Hopefully his health stays good. He's been dealing with some kind of heart issue. Not quite hypertension, but he had some irregular chest beats a couple weeks ago. Philadelphia will be in Big D. The Cowboys, they've just really disappointed Cowboy fans, among others. And they're 3-5. They've lost a couple must-win games. Philadelphia is playing a little better than expected. Coach Sirianni was in the hot seat last year when they just, you know, stunk it up down the stretch like the last six games. I think they went, you know, 1-5. They got beat by the Bucks in the playoffs. They had that Guido Toledo security guard who got, banned when he put his hands on Dre Greenlaw, the Niners. I think the Eagles handle the Cowboys, especially without Dak Prescott. Cooper Rush will be starting in his place. You wonder when Trey Lance is going to get a look-see. Probably in a few weeks when the Cowboys are officially out. The Eagles need to win this to stay pace with Washington. I can't wait for those two teams to play. I think it's next week, maybe. The New York Jets, they can't afford to lose anymore. They're 3-6. They did get a win last Thursday, which helped them immensely. The Arizona Cardinals, I mentioned they are in first place in the NFC West. They are a home underdog against the Jets, who, again, are coming in well-rested. And the Jets know they pretty much have to win out. I just don't know where that franchise is going. I think Aaron Rodgers maybe bit off a little more than I can chew, still playing past the age of 40, but what am I to say? I'm definitely playing past the age of 40 myself. Sunday night game will feature a couple pretty good teams. Detroit will visit the Texans in Houston. The Texans are 6-3. Lions might be a Super Bowl-bound team for the NFC. The NFC's got some tough teams. We'll see. The Lions, maybe the best team in the NFC right now. Especially after they handle the Vikings, which surprisingly might be the second best team. And you got the Packers. Somebody from the NFC West may step up. Will it be the Rams? Will it be the 49ers? Well, Seattle or Arizona right the ship. Speaking of the Rams, they host Miami on Monday night. A couple teams really desperate to turn things around. The Dolphins have Tua Tagovailoa back, and the Rams have won, I think, 3 in a row. Puka Nacua's back. They were dangling Cooper Kupp at the trade deadline. They kept him. Rams are favored by 1 over Miami at home Monday night in Los Angeles. And just real quick to confirm, next Thursday's night game on November the 14th, that will be the matchup between Washington and Philadelphia. And that's going to be a Thursday night game. Definitely to check out. Ooh, also next Sunday, the Ravens and Steelers. That's one to have some aspirin and pain pills watching because somebody's always going to be black and blue in that game. We'll talk about next week, next week. I'm Jay Cruz. That's all the time we have for Fantasy Sports Friday, HealthyLife.net Radio.